Today in the studio, I have with me the 8th president of Bates College right here in Lewiston, Maine. This is Clayton Spencer, who came to be with us on July 1st, 2012 from Harvard University, where she had been for 15 years. We're so glad to have you here in Maine.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
I know that you have talked about this with various people, but, you know, what is it that Maine, what brought you here?
So I have a typical story in the sense that I'm a person from away who got introduced to Maine through summers. It turns out that the original rusticators in Acadia, there was a big Harvard connection there. So when my then husband and I started working at Harvard, there were two alums who had donated houses on Sutton Island, which is off of Northeast Harbor, and donated them for the use of faculty and families. And so we started going up to a house on Sutton Island when our kids were babies. And that's all we wanted to do and they wanted to do for any vacation for their whole lives growing up. And by about 2003, we decided we'd love to own a place of our own. And so we bought a place on Swan's Island, which is off of Acadia, off of Bass Harbor, has a ferry, which was important to me, so that I could actually get stuff over there without having to drive my own little boat, which I have. But there's bad weather, there's other things. So for 25 years, we've been coming up to the area. And all of that did was absolutely mesmerize me with Maine, which I find to be probably one of the most beautiful states in the United States from a natural beauty point of view. I love the granite, which suggests substantiality to me. I'm not a kind of sandy, beachy kind of person. I love the fact that you're dependent on the weather, that there's a kind of gritty, no-nonsense dimension to the people of Maine that just all appeals to me. So when I had the chance to actually live in a Maine zip code and have 207 on my phone and have a Maine license plate, I couldn't resist.
You like the grittiness of the people. I've spent quite a bit of time in Lewiston, and my family is originally from Biddeford, which some people, it's very similar, Biddeford, yeah. Lewiston, the mill town, and yeah. There's a grittiness to right. that. Bates is this beautiful oasis in the midst of this very gritty landscape, and yet what you're trying to do is make sort of the boundaries more porous.
Absolutely. And we've made a lot of progress that predates me. Don Harward, who was the 6th president of Bates, was extremely committed to community-engaged learning, which means not simply volunteering, which is great in the community, but actually recognizing that the community you live in can be a partner in the academic enterprise. So more than a third of our students actually take courses where there is an active dimension of working in the Lewiston schools or working with Somali refugees or whatever. So you might take a sociology class. That's a kind of living sociology class. And so we have what is known as the Harward Center for Community Partnerships, a big dimension of sort of what we offer as a college. And it takes Lewiston from being the other. So you suggested Bates as an oasis and Lewiston as a sort of gritty urban area, all of which is true. But what you want to do is weave the two of them together. And we learn as much from our partners in Lewiston as they do from us. This isn't a sense of noblesse oblige. It's a sense of genuine partnership. And it's very enriching to the lives of our students. The other dimension is I'm trying as a person who lives in Lewiston to just be out and get involved. So a group of us went to the Franco-American Heritage Gala this fall. We I go to the local restaurants, I take walks through there, go to the farmer's market, just to suggest this is a place you want to be and want to live. And I find Lewiston both fascinating but also fun.
It does seem to be experiencing a renaissance. I mean, it has a couple of very nice hospitals. The river has been cleaned up. There are some restaurants that have come into town which are, you know, on par with Portland restaurants. And I mean, there's something about Lewiston that just you could feel like it's as if spring has started and things are starting to grow again.
Right. I don't have a frame of reference to compare. I don't know if there have been renaissances before that have then gone back down, but definitely there's a lot of vitality now, very actively engaged Chamber of Commerce, business leaders, community leaders, working on the riverfront project, a lot of entrepreneurism, as you suggest. So I think I'm hoping it really will take off. The sense of beauty and history in Lewiston, if you look at the mills, they are, to my mind, absolutely gorgeous architecture along the river, and they evoke a history and a sort of key part of the building of the United States and who we are. So to me, it's an inherently attractive place to try to make things happen, and I think that that's really true.
You're an individual who has had sort of multiple iterations of lives. You began with a bachelor's in theology, and you went into law. And along the way, there are various steps. And I encourage anybody who hasn't read Sarah Bronstein's profile, which is in the April 2013 issue of Maine Magazine, to do so. You seem to be of multiple minds about things.
Well, I guess the way to say this is I live life from the inside out. And so I'm always trying to figure out at any given moment what my deeper interests and passions are and how to actualize them in the world. I think one of the greatest privileges in life is to be able to do work that has meaning to you and hopefully has meaning as well to others. So in the early period, I grew up in an academic family. I figured the only thing you do is pick which academic field you do. And all of a sudden I realized that I was more action-oriented, more worldly than being a scholar in religion would have allowed me to be, although I still to this day find the questions there intellectually interesting. So I went to law school always intending to use the law in some sort of public education-oriented domain, and that's what I ultimately did and still find myself doing, although I'm not practicing law anymore. So if you just sort of take life as each next step, it can lead you into pretty interesting places. I feel I've had a lot of luck being able to hop from the rock I'm on to the next rock that looks interesting.
In an interview that you did this past spring with the Bates radio station, you mentioned the notion of discernment, which is a theological notion, if not a religious notion, and the importance of discernment when it comes to sort of giving Bates students the tools they need to move out into the greater world.
What is that about?
What is that about? Tell me.
So let me take a step back and just frame it a little. It used to be that presidents of liberal arts colleges, like me, would say, a liberal arts education doesn't train you for a job, it trains you for any job. Well, that's all very good and well, but this is a pretty difficult and competitive world to enter these days. And I don't think it's enough for us to say, you just take philosophy or economics or whatever, and good luck to you. And it used to be a sort of point of pride that the better the college, the worse the career services. And my sense is, if you look at the liberal arts and what we're doing, the key thing we're doing is helping individuals figure out who they are and what they're meant to do, and do that in community. So they do it in a residential community while they're on campus, and then they're going into a variety of communities in life. They may marry, have children, and the key things in life are work and love, right? If you can get those right, you can get anything right. So what we're doing is taking the question of purposeful work. What are you meant to do? And by this, I don't mean public service work. If you're meant to work on Wall Street, figure that out. Let's help you get the tools. Let's help you have the experiences while you're at college to prepare you for that work. If you're meant to be a forest ranger, all you want to do is be outside, let's help you figure that out, get the tools, and do that. So we're taking a very structured approach to this at Bates. From the moment kids get on our campus in orientation, we're going to start working with them to ask the big questions. Not what color is my parachute, not how am I going to write my resume, but what matters to me in life? What unleashes my creativity? How can I spend the next 4 years figuring out what will give me satisfaction in life and how I can make a larger contribution? So we're going to start that on day one, and that will be a process of discernment, working with our students in very structured ways over the course of 4 years. And then we'll have a series of practical experiences to make sure that they are filling their toolkits with tools they will need when they graduate, so that I hope we will be an example of a very engaged model of the liberal arts, deeply intellectual and personal in all the ways that that education is supposed to be, but also providing connectivity to what's important as an adult in life.
I have my own 19-year-old son, and I have a sense, actually, that he seems to have figured out what it is that he is passionate about. But not all 18, 19, right. 20, 21, 22-year-olds right. even do.
Right.
Some people take much longer than others. How is it that you're able to engage them to the point where they can even be aware?
So part of being aware may be being aware that you don't know what you want to do. And so then it's the question, take the pressure off, what am I going to be in life if I haven't figured that out from the inside, and reframe, help kids to reframe the question as, what should I do next? What might I like to try this summer? But just work with young people where they are. I mean, to me, any educational process is only effective if you meet the kid where he or she is. And the point of being a small, engaged, residential liberal arts community is that we have adults who care, whom kids respect, and who are trained to help students work in these ways. I have a son also who's graduated from college, but on a longer trajectory of figuring out exactly what he wants to do. And the point really is to work with kids in a variety of ways, and different models work with different students at different stages.
I would imagine that having you as a mother and seeing that what you have done, your son could say, well, she started out in theology, she went to law school, she went into education, that might be somewhat useful.
Right. I hope so. But every kid has to figure out his or her own way. And so,
well, not in that he needs to go into any of those, but
right.
just that people can change over time, and that you may not know when you're over here that you're going to eventually end up over here, but
right.
you just kind of keep dialing back and figuring it out, and it's okay to do that.
Right. And taking life or problems in pieces so that you can actually not have a concern about where you're going to be when you're 70, when you're 24. And that's my big message to any human being, is take a problem where it is, carve it into tractable pieces that you can get your arms around, and then take a step. And if you sort of bring it down to a manageable size and a manageable time horizon, it gets a lot easier to make decisions.
Does it seem that we may have made college the goal rather than an intermediary step when it comes to high school education?
I definitely think that the process of preparing yourself for college, choosing college, that which can be a very confounding process for young people who are fortunate enough to have that as a choice, which is a great privilege to begin with. We've made that process very objectified. I think people get very concerned about their SATs, their grades, what extracurriculars they have on their resume. And I think many kids along the way lose track of what's inside and what they really want to do. And many parents, and this seems to be accentuated in our own parenting generation, many parents get too involved in investing their own desires and egos in the choices of their students or the opportunity their children may have. So I think it's what has ironically happened is what you get now applying to college is a highly constructed being. And college should be about deconstruction. College should be about peeling back the layers, trying things, taking risks, figuring out what really matters to you. And it's hard to move from being this sculpted individual that looks good to an admissions committee to being prepared to take the kinds of risks that will make college a wonderful experience.
I do know that my oldest, the one that I was referring to, my 19-year-old, had that experience that he went to a very good high school, the same high school I went to. He got into a lot of very good colleges. And then he took a year and went to Guatemala City and worked with Safe Passage and helped educate children whose families lived outside the dump. And that, I think, was his year of deconstruction. I think he went from being the scholar athlete, soccer player, baseball player, known as, you know, whatever his identity was, to showing up in a foreign country, speaking the language just well enough, and realizing that, you know, that wasn't his identity. It's just what he sort of appeared to be on the surface.
Right. And I think those experiences are absolutely crucial. We are, for instance, just in very concretely, we're very hospitable to kids taking gap years between high school and colleges to have those experiences. We encourage our students to go abroad. Just speaking another language where you're not the one in control is a very humbling, deconstructing, enriching experience. So all of that, I think, is absolutely true.
There is that group of parents and students that you described where there is a choice. Mm-hmm. And people can say, I want to go to this really good college or I want to go to this really good college. And then there's the group of parents and students, or even students who don't necessarily have parents or engaged parents, for whom there are very few choices. I think you're trying to reach that group. You're trying to reach out to children who are intelligent and have potential and would do well in a small liberal arts college. And you're trying to say, come here, we can help you.
Yes, absolutely we are. I mean, all of American higher education has that as a dimension. Bates College has it as a deep part of our identity. Bates, for the broader public, was founded by abolitionists. We recruited freed slaves to come to Bates during and after the Civil War. Bates was co-ed from the beginning when no other of the good colleges were co-ed. They were male, and then later there were women's colleges that came up. And Bates never had fraternities or sororities because there's a very strong egalitarian impulse in Bates. So one of our most famous graduates is Benjamin Elijah Mays, who was the president of Morehouse College, where Martin Luther King Jr. went. And Morehouse is a very famous historically black college in Atlanta. So it is a deep part of our history that we recognize that excellence and opportunity are bound up together. So this is a fundamental insight of American higher education. So after World War II, when GIs were coming back from the war, the government decided that rather than giving a cash bonus to GIs, which they'd given after the Civil War and World War I, they would give a voucher to take it to go to the college of their choice. And at that time, the best colleges and universities in the United States hadn't really been open to a broad public. And the president of the University of Chicago at the time was a guy named Robert Maynard Hutchins. And he said that the GI Bill would turn American colleges and universities into hobo jungles. But in fact, what the GI Bill did was create a great social experiment, which was to open the nation's best colleges and universities, the liberal arts colleges, the research universities, the public universities, whatever an individual chose. It opened them to the broadest range of talent that had ever been true in any society and true in America. And today, American universities are 17 of the top 20 universities in the world by any ranking. So it's one of the industries that America is still best at. There are many industries we're no longer still best at. Higher education is one. And that's because we have understood in America that higher education needs to recruit from the broadest talent pool, and it needs to give opportunity to kids who may not come from backgrounds where they have educated parents or know what college is about. So Bates is right on that program. We actively recruit all over the country. We particularly now are recruiting in the South and the Southwest and the West, where a lot of American population is moving. This year we have the strongest academic class we've ever had and the strongest class in terms of diversity that we have ever had. Those two go together. They're not at odds. We run programs where we bring in kids from families who may not be college-educated parents. We invite them to campus. One group we invite after junior year in high school, one in their senior year. And we want to show them what the college experience would be. And we pay to fly those kids in. And if their parents want to come, we fly their parents in. Because some kids, their parents can't imagine sending their son from Memphis or L.A. to the other L.A., to Maine. And so we're all over this, and it's fundamental to Bates's identity and mission.
You have a daughter who just graduated from college.
Yes.
And you have how many other children?
I have two children, a son who's been out of college for 3 years working, and a daughter who just graduated.
How has your experience working within the higher education system, how has that impacted them and their own higher education?
Well, you know the expression, the cobbler's children have no shoes. I think one way, I have a couple of funny stories about that. My son informed me when he was a junior in high school that I was way too uptight and way too elitist to be involved in his college process, and he would just visit colleges himself. And he chose to go to NYU, which is a gigantic urban university, because he wanted to be in the city, and it was a great choice for him. My daughter similarly kind of charted her own path, and I think in one sense I'm very relaxed about the college process, because, and they were too, because they'd grown up hearing about it. They knew that all I really cared about was that they made the choice that was right for them. Again, they've been hit over the head with live from the inside out. So, and they're both pretty good at doing that.
You grew up on the Davidson campus?
Yes.
And then your children, it sounds like, had some experience growing up around Harvard.
They grew up with both of their parents working at Harvard. We lived in a nearby suburb, so in Winchester.
But how does that change your perspective as a child growing up, either directly on the campus or having two parents who are really involved in the community of a university or college?
Well, in a sense, for me, I think, you know, I've said it was the family business. It was what education, higher education, how institutions operate, all of that was the dinner table conversation for me. I think a lot of it was the dinner table conversation for my kids. And so the notion that, what field are you interested in? What book have you written? What speaker is coming? I remember absolutely insisting that my kids needed to get out of school to come when Nelson Mandela got an honorary degree from Harvard, which was in a very exceptional circumstance. He was only one of four people ever to get an honorary degree, not at commencement. The others were George Washington, Winston Churchill, and later Senator Kennedy. So I wanted them to see this piece of history, Nelson Mandela, and what it was shortly after, it was in the mid-90s after the South Africa miracle. And so events like that, getting to come hear Yo-Yo Ma play the cello, getting to meet J.K. Rowling, all of those were part of the fabric of their lives in ways that I think give them both a great appreciation for books, for conversation about ideas, all of that stuff. At the same time, they're really normal kids who watch America's Next Top Model and do all the bad computer games. You're not supposed to do all of that stuff.
In Maine, we have an interesting, well, it's an interesting landscape. And having lived here most of my life and having been a doctor in southern Maine and northern Maine and various other places, the county jail, various places, it seems that sometimes it's hard for people who are well-educated to understand other people who didn't have an opportunity to be well-educated and know that they are extremely intelligent. Yes. And learned much through their lives, through the hard work, through whatever, you know, working on a lobster boat or working the family farm. And I never realized this myself because I just went through and got my education. Everybody around me, we all got our educations. But, you know, it wasn't until I got to the other side and had someone very close to me who didn't get a college education, you know, try to kind of open my eyes as to how much I didn't realize other people already knew.
Absolutely.
Do you see that that's an issue ever with Bates kids who come in who...
Absolutely, I do. I mean, I think that's one of the reasons that the amount of community-engaged learning we do is so important. But absolutely, it's an issue. There are some aspects of college life that, you know, some of the partying and other stuff that goes on, and then our custodial staff is picking up the pieces. And there are a variety of ways that we've actually begun thinking and talking about to say, how do we actually get the kids in the dorms to sit down with the custodial staff and say, wait a sec, what would it be to be walking in your shoes on Monday morning? So it's definitely an issue. And that's why my message of authenticity and live from the inside out is meant to give voice to the notion that people bring their gifts, they develop their gifts in a variety of ways, and they use them in the world in a variety of ways. And I hope that my own children, and I hope Bates students, gradually come to realize that anybody who is working with diligence, integrity, skill, all of those things, is deserving of respect, is interesting, is someone you can learn from. So that's, I think it's a hugely important message, and I think there can be stark moments in a state like Maine, which has the kind of economic climate it does.
I remember, as I said, having lived here many years, I remember one particular tragedy that occurred with a Bates student and a non-Bates situation. And the sense that I have had is that some hope was born out of that tragedy, that it certainly, you know, this death that occurred was horrific, and it shone the spotlight on right. Bates in not the best way. But it seems as though things have actually, there's been some hope to come out of that.
I think that's right. I mean, that was a member of our lacrosse team. I think the lacrosse coach used it as a very teachable moment with the lacrosse teams over the years. We've been working very actively with community leaders in Lewiston, with the police in Lewiston. We make a whole lot of efforts to try to keep our relationships with the city not only peaceful, but productive and genuinely mutual. And I think we're making progress.
Bates alums are a fiercely engaged and collegial and loyal group. And I can say this, I went to Bowdoin, and Bowdoin alums are similar, but I've seen, there's a fierceness to it that I don't think I've seen from other college alums. Why is that? Why are they so fiercely loyal?
So this is something I'm very struck by. Coming from Harvard to Bates is just how much people care about each other and care about the college community. There is something, I think what I would say, what I've noticed is there are certain campus cultures where the currency of the realm is individual achievement. And it's what I do in my biology course that makes me, you know, slightly better than you are and slightly more likely to get into med school. At Bates, that is not the currency of the realm. The currency of the realm is that there is a sense, a palpable sense, that there is a common good, a sense of community on campus that is certainly equal to, if not more real, than the notion of individual accomplishment. And it's a product of years and years and decades of the Bates culture. Culture is a slow growing mix of things. It's hard to know what it goes back to. I'd like to think that it goes back to the very principled, egalitarian founding of Bates that is just part of our DNA, but it's definitely strong on campus and among our alums. I've traveled all over the country this year meeting alumni groups, and it's an amazing experience, and one I'm very proud of. I'm very proud that the notion that you owe something to the larger good and not just to your own self-actualization is important. And the most fully realized individuals are individuals who are also most in community. I mean, you know from the medical world, the studies they do, the people who are happiest, healthiest, live the longest are people who have strong social connections and know how to give to others as well as receive for themselves.
I know you're going to continue to do good work at Bates. Is there one thing that you hope will be your legacy at some point, someday, when you eventually leave?
So I have one managerial thing that needs to happen, and then I'll talk about a broader legacy. Bates is a very strong experience and strong academically, but we have never had the financial resources that other colleges have whom we compete very successfully with. And I want to make sure that when I leave Bates N years from now, that it's in a strong position financially, because the kind of highly engaged education that we and other liberal arts colleges offer is just inherently expensive to feed and house and teach students in community. So that's just something that needs to happen. In terms of what I'd like for Bates to achieve, I would like Bates to set the standard for the engaged liberal arts in the 21st century. And by that, I mean we deliver an excellent personalized education on campus, in residence, with all of that means, knowing that we're working on the total human project with these students. It's not just what they're learning in economics, it's how are they developing as human beings. So that's doing what we do very well. The second thing is engaging the forces that are transforming our world and education. So engaging technology, figuring out how we can take advantage of some of the amazing content that's out there, the amazing technique, the things we're learning about how kids learn. And then we talked before about taking on the question of preparing our students for lives of purposeful work as a core aspect of our mission, not an afterthought. So all of those things, to me, will create the model of the liberal arts for the next 50 years, and I want Bates to be at the front end of that.
That is a very laudable goal. I'm privileged that I have been able to spend time with Clayton Spencer, the 8th president of Bates College in Lewiston, Maine. And thank you for all that you're doing to educate our children and to connect with the community at large.
Thank you so much for the opportunity to share my hopes and dreams with you.